everybody. Welcome to today's Clumen webinar, demonstration of the ATSDR Brownfields Land Reuse Site Tool and Dose Calculator Tool. It's part of the NARPM Presents series, sponsored by EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. This series presents select presentations from the National Association of Remedial Project Managers National Meeting. I'm Mike Adam. I'm from the same office that sponsors this seminar, EPA's Office of Superfund Remediation and Technology Innovation. I'll be your moderator today. And before I begin and introduce our speaker, there are a few logistics that I'm going to go over. You can move over to slide 2 on the presentation for these housekeeping bullets. If you're using a phone line to participate in today's seminar, please mute your phone, but do not put us on hold. Sometimes there's hold music that can interrupt the seminar. If you do not have a mute button, you can use star 6 to mute. During Q&A sessions, those of you on the phone can take your phone off mute to comment and ask questions. At that time, you may hit pound 6 to unmute. For today's presentation, you may ask questions at any time during the presentation. However, the easiest way for participants to ask questions is by typing in your question using the question mark icon at the top of the HTML presentation. And you do not need to wait until any Q&A session to do that. But again, today we are going to be going over questions throughout the seminar. And if you do it that way, I will moderate the questions. You can also use that form to alert us of any technical problems. Again, that's by hitting the question mark icon at the top of the HTML presentation, and a text box will open up prompting you to submit your information. For today's presentation, the presenter will alert you to which slide we are on, and you'll have to manually advance each slide. If you're using the HTML online version, you can navigate the presentation with the arrow buttons at the top of the screen, as shown on slide 2. You should have already checked in using the Go to Session button at the top of the seminar homepage. Also on this seminar homepage, after the session, you can access the feedback form and the additional resources links from the sidebar buttons on the seminar homepage area. It's on the left side. You may also access these areas through the last slide of this presentation. We've provided two links, one for the feedback form, one for additional resources. And we appreciate your feedback and ask that you please fill out the form at the end of the presentation. If you wish to receive a printout receipt of your attendance for today's presentation, you can print the confirmation form that is displayed after you have filled out the feedback form. This event is being recorded and will be archived on the Clumen website. Within about 1 to 2 weeks, you should be able to download it in several formats or replay it online. You may subscribe to our Clumen podcast to receive new archived seminars as they become available. You may also subscribe to our RSS feeds by navigating to the news feeds page. And you can do this by going to the Clumen homepage, clicking on the RSS news feeds button on the Staying Connected right-hand sidebar. And moving on to today's presentation, today's speaker is Gary Perlman. He's a member of the U.S. Public Health Service, and he works for the Agency for Substances and Disease Registry in the Region 1 Boston location. Gary's going to be discussing two tools today. One is the ATSDR Brownfields and Land Reuse Site Tool. It's a rapid site screening and multiple chemical exposure dose calculating tool. And secondly, he's going to be discussing the dose calculator tool, which allows users to compute the amount of a toxic substance an individual may be exposed to, or in other words, the dose. Lastly, please make sure that you have muted your phone, and if you do not have a mute button, you may hit star 6 to mute your phone. So with that, I will turn it over to Gary.
Great. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, greetings. I'm pleased to be able to provide an opportunity to help remedial project managers learn more about ATSDR and some of the tools we've developed. As Mike indicated, I'm a regional representative with ATSDR Region 1, the New England office, and we'll be conducting this tour of two software programs we developed to enable environmental health officials and others to quickly assess contaminated sites slated for reuse. The programs were developed by the ATSJR Brownfield Land Reuse Initiative team, which includes Laura Berman, who's the ATSJR Brownfields coordinator, and Leanne Bing, who's an environmental health scientist and headquartered in Atlanta. Community health is an important part of our land revitalization project, and ATSJR works to include health considerations in brownfields redevelopment and land reuse. And our initiative promotes health, community involvement, and partnerships, particularly with those communities involved with land reuse sites. Now, I'll be moving on to slide 4. So just briefly, who is ATSJR? We are a federal public health agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We work closely with EPA, state, local, and tribal officials to help prevent harmful exposures to diseases related to industrial chemicals. These tools emerge from our Brownfields Land Reuse Initiative, whose goal is to integrate public health into redevelopment. ATSJR has regional offices that are co-located within each of the 10 EPA regions, as well as in D.C. and headquarters. ATSJR regional representatives provide the agency a unique expertise that combines special technical and field expertise. Regional representatives are essential liaisons with all ATSJR divisions and offices. We have established working relationships with EPA, federal, state, citizens, and tribal governments, and maintain a knowledge of sites and issues in our regions. This information enables ATSJR to address regional issues with appropriate sensitivity and make informed decisions. Now going to slide 5. So ATSJR has developed these tools to assist environmental health officials to assess hazardous waste sites, particularly slated for reuse. This tool is the result of a local public health department survey that was conducted and includes a robust set of features. These features include site inventory, site visit module, citizens' concerns, call log, multiple chemical dose calculator, and document repository. This resource is freely available and has been and has the ability to increase environmental public health capacity in a cost-effective manner. Training is often provided in the form of user-friendly tour guides, such as this presentation, free phone consultations, and I've also given other web seminars as well, and gone inside the places if they wanted hands-on demonstrations. We'll be discussing the dose calculator in particular. We've also developed an action model, which includes a way of incorporating public concerns in the redevelopment process, which is the fact sheet on the top right of that slide. If anyone would like, we can send a DVD set that includes these tools as well as videos of healthy redevelopment processes. Just a few definitions before I move on. The term brownfields has a few different definitions, but the EPA definition, sort of the classic one, it's an abandoned, idle, or underutilized industrial or commercial facility where expansion or redevelopment is complicated by real or perceived environmental contamination. ATSJR uses that definition but expands upon it, and we generally use the term land reuse sites. And that term is a broader definition that includes sites slated for redevelopment. And this broader definition encompasses brownfield sites, as well as former Superfund sites, RCRA facilities, and any other redevelopment site. Public health agencies are an important resource to communities who are either concerned about health impacts of current conditions at these types of sites or considering redevelopment of these properties for expanded reuse. Public health agencies can assist the community in assessing potential health impacts, addressing community concerns of conditions at brownfield sites, communicating risks, and supporting appropriate actions. ATSJR developed a local health department survey to assess the local capacity to work on land reuse issues. One of the survey questions asked, what tools and training could enhance redevelopment, could enhance relevant local public health department skills? One of the top responses included the development of a tool that included rapid site inventory capabilities, including site history, proposed use, contaminants, and future use. Moving on to slide 6. So the ATSTR Land Reuse Site Tool, again, is a rapid site screening tool. It allows many opportunities to assess the site in terms of past use, institutional controls, future use, dealing with sensitive populations, and suspected or confirmed contamination. It includes two main components. One is the inventory module, and the second is the multiple chemical dose calculator. This program is written in Microsoft Access, so it does require the user to have Microsoft Access installed on their computer. And we'll be moving on to the next slide, slide 7. When the tool is launched, this is the main screen that is displayed. And from this screen, there are five main options. One can enter site information, or view site information, import data from systems that have been developed previously, update previous versions of the tool, or view the disclaimer or exit. When an update of this database is released, it is a complete version of the tool that, when launched, will search for all previous versions and import saved information into the new tool. That will leave the older version intact, and the new version will contain all previous data as well as any new information. Some of the updates that we add to this tool include such things as updated comparison values, which is such things as reference dose, reference concentration, slope factor, and some other values developed by ATSDR. And moving on to slide 8, the next slide. And here is a list of some of the features and capabilities of the tool. Again, we can evaluate exposures with this tool. You can calculate doses with a range of parameters. One of the nice features of the tool is you can customize the exposure parameters as much as you'd like. You can specify how long someone is exposed, how they're being exposed, what age group, as well as body parts if it's dermal exposure, so it's really quite robust. Also does review some statistical analysis of data that's put into the tool, looking at 95 confidence intervals, testing for normality, geometric mean, and others. What's nice is this tool has the ability to directly import analytical laboratory data, particularly from EPA labs, and the data can then be processed directly into the tool from the Excel format, which is often provided from EPA labs. You can also export data from the tool to a commerce-separated file that can then be incorporated into any other tool if you wish. You can query the tool quite easily. Some of the users that we have on this site have 600 to 800 sites, and it's quite easy to query sites with the query feature. And you can also look at different methods of laboratory analyses. So moving on to slide 9. Okay. So this is the inventory component of this tool. And the Brownfields Land Reuse Site Tool includes several components to assist the user to collect data from land reuse sites. One of the main components is the inventory checklist. This includes a series of data screens that prompt the user for information. We'll be viewing these screens in detail shortly. So you can see the interface is quite familiar. Most of the options on the screens are buttons to click, small boxes to type in text, or drop-down menus to select items from. So then moving on to the next screen, slide 10. Just one point I want to make is this tool, again, is solely based on located on your computer. It can be used by multiple individuals at the same time on a network, but it is not based on the Internet, so it's not an Internet-based system. It's not a web-based system. This was important for many of our users who wanted to maintain their data confidentially and not have any reliance on an Internet connection that may fail. So, again, this system is all locally based and not Internet-based. And we at ATSDR have no ability to get access to data that's stored on it. So again, on looking at slide 10, so once the first option is selected, the submenu would appear, and this is a menu that gives you four main options. You can enter new site information, view or print a saved site. You can also search the data using an intuitive query form and, of course, just close that. So as we move on to slide 11, I'm sorry for the delay. I have a slower computer and I'm trying to do two screens at once, so I apologize. So we're on slide 11 now, and this screen is sort of the main screen of the inventory tool. As you can see, it's quite busy, and the next several slides will depict additional screens. Since there's a lot of information that can be entered for an inventory of a site, we've divided up into chunks, and each chunk is basically in a different page that's indicated by the tabs on the top where that red arrow is. And again, information is entered in text boxes, which are familiar, you know, white box, you can type in information, check boxes, drop-down list, and also free-form text areas where you can paste information from a Word document. One important feature is the user is not required to enter any information other than the site name and the scenario name. So nothing is obligatory. It's as much as the user wants to enter. The fields on these forms were developed after several focus group sessions were developed, including local health departments and at the National Tribal Science Council meeting to include tribal-specific fields. The information for each site is entered on a series of 13 screens, which are indicated in the tabs, also known as pages. And the first page is indicated as site information. And the user can quickly and easily return to any tab whenever they wish to update data as they're entering the site. So at this point, we'll be on slide 12 now.
Hey, Gary?
Yes.
I had a question that came in online here, and I think this gets sort of to the fact that it's based on Microsoft Office product. But the question is, can the information be exported to word processing programs?
Yep. So, yeah, as far as the data in this system can be exported into one format is known as a CSV, like Charlie, Sierra, Victor. And that basically means that all the fields will be separated by the comma delimiter. And each, all the fields will then have quotations around them. So I guess, I mean, you could put it into a Word document. You could also import it directly into Excel that way, because Excel has an ability to directly import CSV files into the spreadsheet format. So hopefully, it can be imported into Word. It'd be a bit cumbersome because the commas, I don't think, can be stripped out as easily as you can. So if you go maybe first through Excel. Were there any other questions?
Not at this time.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Great. Yeah, just any question anytime. You know, no question is unwelcome. So we're back to slide 12 here. And so one of the nice features of this setup that we developed is this screen includes a unique method of selecting information for inclusion into the database. It looks familiar enough. I mean, there's a drop-down box with items on it. But in this case, the user selects an item from a pre-populated list and then clicks the Add button to place that item in a holding bin to the right. So you can see coal gasification and commerce, or commercial, are on the right. Many items can be stored in the bin, and if an item is not in the pre-populated list, the user can simply add something of their own, and that new item will be saved in the database and will appear in the drop-down list from that point on. An item can easily be removed from the bin as well as from the list. So this form includes items that are described for the site related to past use of the site, current use, and adjacent sites. These items are sometimes the most important data in the tool, as past use of a site is often a great indicator of likely contamination. The adjacent site is also an indication of what could be migrating to the site of interest. We've had some sites that we've worked on, and for instance, one of them was a radium dial clock factory. And the initial assessment of the site before this tool was developed didn't go into the historical records to determine what its past use was, and they didn't realize that they made this building into apartments and didn't check for radiation, which there was very high levels, and people had to be relocated. So if you know what the past use was, you can be a good indicator of what might be contaminants on site. And again, so you can see, very simple, easy to use method. You just click it and it gets put into the bin on the right and gets saved into the database. And what's nice is when you add items to the bin on the right, that automatically will sort it each time, so you don't have to look up where things are. And you would just, on the leftmost part, you can see there's a little checkbox where you check if you wanted to include the past use, or current, or adjacent, or all three. And now we're now back to going on to slide 13. And this page includes various fields related to what is known about the site and the source of those information, particularly reports. Often people have information about a site, but it may be limited to a city record or a phase one assessment or a phase two assessment. Maybe there's some analytical data. And we'll just take a minute to let you look at the data captured on this form. It's quite comprehensive. Again, it includes a lot of fields. Again, all these are optional, but they're fields that are specifically requested by various focus groups, so there's quite a range there. And this information is part of the inventory, again, and will not be analyzed. So the tool itself doesn't analyze the inventory components. It just saves it, that's all. You can query it, you can print it, but it doesn't analyze. However, we will later discuss how this tool imports laboratory analytical data for processing through the DOS calculator module. And the scenario name is required when you're saving a site. You can just, it's a name that can be anything. It can be free form, it could be a sentence, just something meaningful. So when you're looking back on the site, you can get some information about how to get to it quickly. Now we're on slide 14. And this slide captures the involvement that was on the site from any agencies. For instance, was a health agency, an environmental agency, tribal government, state department, or state health department working on the site? And if so, when did that occur, and maybe who was the last person that worked on it? So again, the same easy-to-use interface where you just checkbox and type in information. So as we go to slide 15, we're now seeing more of the this unique feature where you can add multiple items. So this one is the future use of the site and is often used to establish cleanup levels, so residential or commercial industrial. You know, if the site is slated for reuse as a school or daycare center, then to be sure that those levels are met for residential. It is our hope that this tool will reduce, if not prevent, the development of sensitive receptor facilities on sites unless a thorough investigation is appropriate and appropriate remediation is conducted. We hope to see the elimination of newspaper headlines that report a daycare center needs to be evacuated due to a contamination that was not analyzed for due to inadequate initial environmental investigations. It's unfortunate they happen where daycare centers had to be evacuated because either mercury was dripping or there was some other issue. So, you know, due diligence from maybe this tool can help prevent that. So this form, similar to the past forms, allows the user to select multiple items as well as adding their own customization. All right, now we're at slide 16. This one is capturing the distance to the nearest sensitive receptor, such as daycare center, school, or nursing home. And that may indicate a need for possible community involvement or education, especially if people are accessing the site and it's ongoing. It's helpful to know what's near the site. In addition, if you're going to do remediation, it helps to know if there's sensitive populations, maybe to set up additional air monitoring if you're going to be doing some dust monitoring or keep other monitors close to the site for an off-site migration. As we go to slide 17, this now incorporates a little more information. Again, this one is focusing on chemicals. So this section was provided to allow users to enter which chemicals in three media are on or migrating from the site. So these media include air, soil, and water. And the chemicals can be selected from one of three mechanisms. Again, we're trying to keep this as easy to use and simple as possible. So they can either look for the chemical name from the drop-down list, they can look up the chemical abstract number, or by synonym. So these options should cover the majority of ways chemicals are identified. We hope there shouldn't be any missing from this. Again, many chemicals can be selected, and notice that when the cash number was used, the bin then contains the common name. So we selected formaldehyde, the cash number, and the name is appearing on the right, so you can, it's a good way to look up a synonym to see what the real name is. New chemicals can be added, however, they cannot be removed. It would be too complicated to have, this system has about 500 chemicals in it, and to have them removed we thought would not be a useful feature. So if they're in there by mistake, well, unfortunately, just look for another one. That shouldn't be too bad. And then we're now on slide 18. Health concerns are captured on this tool as well, again, the inventory component, and they generally are expressed by community members and can be captured here. We have pre-populated the list with numerous items, and again, the user can add more, can delete from them, they can do many items, and the bins, again, are sorted alphabetically. And some of the, so this is the health concerns, and then there's another category called other concerns, which are general items, such as air quality, noise, fires, dust, physical hazards, safety, traffic, wastewater ponds. So again, these are a list of items that appeared commonly to us, and again, can be customized, and they're commonly items that are reported by phone from community members or others. And we're on slide 19. So this form is the last of the multi-selection sequence forms, and this form depicts the listing of hazards. These are hazards such as tires, trash piles, lagoons, drug labs, just to name a few. And the hazards identified here could be based on visual observation, reports by coworkers or community members. So again, this is just someone, you know, they tell you that this is on the site, you know, they notice that there's light fixtures on site, maybe concern for mercury, or there's hopefully not, but perhaps unexplored ordnance, all kinds of things. Again, you can add easily to this, you know, tires, the concern of a tire fire. So any number of things can be added there. Now we're reaching slide 20 here, and let's see. So this one looks at exposures and exposure routes. And so this includes the different pathways, who is exposed, and how often. We have worked on sites that actually have had several homeless people living in contaminated buildings, so it seems unusual to see it here, but I've actually had a site like that. Skiing may even seem more unusual, but we've actually had a site where there was tailings piles that were contaminated and was advertised on the internet as a great place to ski. So it can happen. It's sort of bizarre that way. So try to capture many things. Again, what the pathway of exposure is and who and how often. Now we're on slide 21. And so this is another unique feature of the tool, the document archival or repository. You can import site-related documents such as reports, photographs, and diagrams and easily import them directly into the tool. The documents become part of the unified location to maintain site files. The documents are actually saved electronically into the database. It's actual SQL database, so get saved in there. The original documents are unchanged. So it's a useful way to have everything in one place. You can have site photographs, you know, phase one analysis, just put it right in there and it gets saved. So this is just the document sort of archival component. If you did put analytical data in here, it would just be saved. It would not be analyzed. Okay, now we go to slide 22. Okay. Yeah. Another component is the citizen call log. It's basically a free form box that you can type in anything you wish. Some sites are first identified by concerned residents contacting the government entity, typically health departments. In order to provide assistance with these interactions, this tool is a component for the collection of concerns. So you can have it listed by date, and again, you can search for these. So you can type in, you know, when they call, and then very useful call log. And now we're going on to slide 23. Another component is the site visit aid. Site visits are often provide invaluable information when first discovering a site or reevaluating exposure conditions. When visiting a site, it is important to identify chemical and physical hazards as well as evidence of trespasser activity in proximity to sensitive populations. Coordinating site visits with members of the community and other contacts is an important means of obtaining relevant documents and gathering additional information. A detailed checklist and data collection section is devoted to the site visit. The items assist in the collection of information to develop a detailed understanding of current site conditions. So what we've done with this component is it's sort of a checklist that jogs people's memory. When they're going to go on site for the first time, here are some of the things to look at. When you're actually on site viewing it, what did you notice? Is the status, is it actually an active site? You know, what's happening on the site? On slide 24, you can see is there any physical hazards on there? Again, this is stuff that you're visually seeing, so it's sort of a record of your site visit. Any private wells, any public water that's nearby. And slide 25, also, again, how close is it to residents, daycare centers? And you have your own units, and this, again, is based on what you've observed recording while doing the site visit. So some of the features to look for when doing a site visit. Slide 26 looks at sensitive populations. Did you, you know, when you're on the site, did you notice any of these people on site? Again, just another way to keep a record of what you saw when you did it. Some people do site visits, they use a windshield tour, where they're in a car and they just drive around, and that's fine. Some people wish to walk on site if they're properly trained and have the appropriate protective equipment if needed. That's also fine. So slide 27 now is the contact information. So, you know, when you did the site visit, who were some of the key people that you made contact with? Brownfields contact, site owner, state health, any private citizens. So this is the record of that site visit. Slide 28 now, this is again sort of brief information about where the community concerns when you went on site. Did people go up to you and say, oh yeah, I saw someone dump some drums there last night? No. Any sort of anecdotal evidence, this is a good place to put that. Approximate number of people accessing the site, if you observed it for a period of time, maybe you could write that down. And how often people are getting on site. Any data gaps? Is there information that should be collected that isn't yet? Maybe ground-penetrating radar if you think there's some buried drums or other items. So slide 29 now. Again, this is other observations, free-form text. You can type in what you want. When you see the big boxes like this, you can type it in Word in advance and just paste it in. Formatting will be lost, but the characters will be kept, so underlining bold will not be saved. So yeah, you just type in any observation that you had. It's unlimited. You can type as much as you'd like on that. On boxes that have the large visual evidence on there. So slide 30. So again, this is where you'd save the site. So you have entered all information. You want to just save it. So whatever. It's good to give it a name that's helpful. You know, just what the parcel was and maybe the town. Or street or cross street, if it's a new site. And then you can get back to it later. So now we're going to look at the second component, which is calculating the impact of exposure. Trespassers accessing a site with chemical contamination may be adversely impacted by exposure to the toxic substances. The ability to determine the magnitude of these impacts, especially when faced with multiple sites, is important when deciding site prioritization scheme. Environmental sampling and analytical data enable quantitative assessment of human health risks. And so the exposure dose is an expression that includes the concentration of a contaminant, the source of the exposure, such as air, soil, water, or fish consumption, the amount exposed, and the duration of the exposure. This tool includes an enhanced module that enables the user to establish exposure parameters such as surface area of skin exposed, quantity of contaminant ingested, age, body weight, and duration of exposure. Once the parameters are established and environmental sampling data are obtained, in a standard electronic spreadsheet format such as Microsoft Excel, the tool will quickly assess the human health risks for numerous chemicals detected in all these media. The tool has a companion module that formats environmental analytical data, particularly from an EPA lab, providing the user with the ability to select specific sampling points, as well as carefully excluding calibration data, often included in laboratory results. So now we're going on to slide 32. And so this is, again, some of the beginning screens of what are your exposure assumptions once you have analytical data and you want to see what is the dose. This is where you first would select the age and with it the associated body weight. Slide 33, once you first select the age and body weight, then you select which media you have analytical data for. So if you have lab results that has all of these different media in one file, then you would check all these. If it's not in one file, you would need to check what it is. So if it just has soil, you just have to check soil. If you did check something that wasn't in the data file, the tool will tell you that you selected fish, but there's no fish data. So it's not, they won't have any problems. It will just let you know that that's not available. So this is where the scenario may be helpful. You could do a scenario that looks at fish, and you can save another one that looks at, just air, depending on how you have the data presented. So you just check the box, and as you check the box for different pathways, tabs appear, and those tabs are more specific parameters that you need to enter for that. So we're going to slide 34, and again, for each pathway selected in the data to be imported, there's a tab that contains the customization fields. So for instance, air is just the only field you can really customize is how long are they being exposed. We'll move across to slide 35. So for soil ingestion, there's really the only thing there is just basically the soil intake rate. Is it going to be something you want to enter on your own, or do you want to have it be sort of standard or customized? The next one is the dermal. So this would be if they're being exposed to soil, what parts of the body are being exposed, and you would check the box as appropriate, and it automatically calculates as you select on it. Again, it's based on the body weight you first selected, so the surface area is dependent on that first item. On slide 37, some of the general parameters for soil would be some of the first two, the viability factor and absorption factor, those are probably good to keep as default if you don't know. And then the exposure time, clearly how many days per year and how many years. A new feature, you can see this is sort of an up and down arrow. You can either type in the number or you can click the up and down arrow and automatically change the number if you wish. You don't need to type in anything if you don't know. Slide 38 for water intake. Again, you could specify standard 1-2 liter rates of consumption, or you can put in your own. Exposure factor, again, basically one is good there. But you could customize it if you wish. 39, similar to soil dermal. This is water dermal, so this is what is being exposed, what surface area of the skin is being exposed. We are working on a shower and bathing model, which would also include looking at taking a shower or a bath in water that's contaminated, separate from looking at swimming in it. On slide 40, we all have some general parameters, a little bit more specific, how many minutes per day, hours per day, days and years for being exposed. And slide 41, the dose calculator, the dose calculated from the consumption of contaminated fish is depicted here. We have provided numerous ways to calculate the consumption of fish, either amount of fish per day, amount of fish per meal, or standard intake rates, which actually also include subsistence fishers, recreational fishers, and other numbers that are commonly used. When we go to slide 42, Yeah, once all the information has been entered, the next step is just to click on the input and process data. What it would do is now it would check to see if all the fields that should have information. So if you said you wanted to include soil dermal, it checks to be sure you selected at least a surface area of the skin. It can't all be left blank, and it will check on slide 43 to see if there's a problem. Like if you can see soil ingestion intake rate was not entered. It would tell you specifically what's the issue, or there was no issue and it's free to move on. The next slide, 44, shows now the next thing would happen is an open box would come up where you'd locate the analytical data, which needs to be in Excel format. Currently needs to be an XLS file. So Excel versions 2007 and above of Excel are not supported, but you can save as XLS file, and that would make that easy. So you'd locate the file and then click on Save. And then on slide 45, it will import the data. So I've used this data to look at data included over 30,000 data points, and it goes pretty quickly. It does about, you know, a couple of seconds per 1,000 data points. So it does check each data point, and as it's importing the data, on slide 46, the imported data is checked for the following fields. Be sure it has a chemical name, CAS number, detection limit, results, units, and media. And as I said, we have a companion tool that allows users to pre-select sample numbers and remove calibration data and format the data directly for this tool to process it. And then it will indicate that the processing is complete. And then 47, so basically you would save that scenario and then close. And then going on to slide 48, now we'll show you how to view existing site data, including the results of the dose calculations. So you click on the first one where it says enter a view, slide 49. This is where you'd click on the second button, which is to view or print save site data. As we go on now to slide 50, so this is what opens up next. If there's data in your database, this will list all of the fields, all the available data, and it has an indication that checkboxes indicate that there are site visits conducted. Also, if there's linked imported analytical data, you see a check mark. This is where you can export the data from a record to a CSV file. This technique will export everything that's on this form that includes all records in the database. That's one way to export data, but another way is to query it first to reduce the data that you're exporting. If you don't want to have everything exported, you can first run the query, which I'll show you, and then you can export just the subset. The record can be displayed, edited, or deleted at this point. You can view or print site data, site visit data as well. And on slide 51, you can view and print the analytical dose calculations report for available media, and you can view and print various reports. The dose calculation, or each report, is based on the statistical parameter in the report name. So if you look at the maximum value, the doses that would be calculated based on the maximum value, or the UCL, or the 95 UCL log, that's what the dose would be calculated on, based on. So as we then move to slide 52, so the statistical calculation. So frequently, environmental sampling data contain a wide variability. There are several ways to incorporate this variability when assessing the exposure dose. This tool provides common approaches including maximum, geometric average, arithmetic average, commonly referred to simply as the average, and 95 upper confidence limit. The 95 UCL is a parameter that provides statistical confidence that the actual site average will not be underestimated. So it's a high bias, but more realistic than just using maximum. It takes into variability of the data. One additional statistical parameter that is often used when considering the use of the 95 UCL is how the data are distributed. In other words, is it a bell curve or is it skewed? This tool determines whether the data are normally or log normally distributed. The data are tested for normality using the Wilk-Shapiro normal test, and log normality is tested using the same procedure except the data are first log transformed. So here's where you select which of the reports. Now, slide 53 is a slice of what the report looks like. It's very busy, it's very dense, so I'm going to go through it slowly here. So interpreting the results, the dose calculation results provide a wealth of information. The following parameters are listed. We have the chemical specific comparison value, the number of sample points exceeding the comparison value, the number of sample points that were non-detect, so how many NDs, as well as number of non-detects that exceeded the comparison value. So the way this happens, if the detection limit is set very high, it could be even above the comparison value. So this is important. It may indicate that the detection limit is too high and the data may not be useful. Also, the contaminant concentration, again, based on each statistical parameter. So we're looking at the maximum report. So the doses here are based on the maximum value. We also have the ingestion dose based on each statistical parameter, dermal. And if it's a carcinogen, we'll have ingestion and dermal cancer risks. And the dose calculation results, there could be many, are categorized in the following criteria. The report will first list actual data that are above a comparison value. Then it will list all data that are below comparison value. Then it will list no comparison value available for these data. And also the last one, all the data are non-detect, and one half the detection limit exceeds the comparison value. So sometimes you can get long printouts, but it's prioritized in this format so you can see which actual data are high. And also we can have chemicals for which we have no comparison values. It will calculate a dose, but it will have nothing to compare it to. So you may want to, in that case you may have to develop your own, if you wish. And if all contaminants are detected at concentration below the respective comparison values, then the contaminants can be considered below a level of concern. This conclusion can only be drawn from sampling results provided an exposure parameter is used. If the exposure parameters do not appear to reflect actual conditions, then a reevaluation should be considered. Perhaps people are accessing the site more frequently than you first thought, so that dose may be higher. Or eating more or other things that you thought were low. So as we go on then to slide 54, you can see we're going to look at each one of these reports just to show you. This is now looking at the average value. So we're now on slide 55. So you can see the same listing here. And in the top part, you can see the body weight, ingestion rate, absorption factor, viability factor, exposure in years. And since this is soil, if we did look at dermal, it would list the limbs that we specified. What we also list, so for the arsenic one, or for any contaminant that has a minimum risk level, an MRL, which is in many ways like an RFD, reference dose. It's an actual dose that ATSR has developed in three different exposure durations. So an acute MRL is really less than 2 weeks. Intermediate MRL is for really 2 weeks to less than a year, and then a chronic is for more than a year. So that means someone who has that dose for the duration specified should not have any adverse health effects. And we have these three listed here, so you can then compare these benchmarks to what the dose you've calculated or the tool has calculated for your site scenario. Now on slide 56, so now geometric mean, really, well now to slide 57. Same idea, really. So you can see this one is geometric mean, and everything else is pretty much the same. So the numbers above the comparison value, so that part of this report does not change. does not change for any of the different types of statistical reports. The only thing that changes is the dose. So you still have the same number above the comparison value, whether you looked at geometric mean, max, or others. But again, just the dose is what's changing. But now I'll go to slide 58. Now this is looking at the 95 UCL of the untransformed, so the raw data, with the normality test. So slide 59, we're right on that there. So now there's some more information on there. As you can see on the bottom line, there is the results of this statistical test for normality. We give you the W statistics, the p-value, as well as the probability, and the summary statement. So if the p-value is less than 0.05, then basically it's the rejection point. So you can't say that it's normal or not. So they're not normally distributed. What's the probability that these data are normally distributed? It's so low that we're not going to call it normally distributed. Going to slide 60, again, the 95 UCL of the log transform data, and then slide 61. So after the log transformation is conducted, the data are now assessed and are log normally distributed. So after all that, the basic conclusion is that it's appropriate to use the 95 UCL of the log transform data in this case, because generally you need to have, you'd like to see normality testing. You don't have to, it's just another option. And now we'll go to slide 62. And what we've done is we again specify very detailed what each of the headings indicate. So CV is the comparison value, greater than CV is number of points above the comparison value, down the line. So again, this presentation essentially is the tour guide that comes with the tool. So it's very detailed and very clear to hopefully to understand. And we'll go to slide 63. And again, so we also have the body weight, absorption fraction, ingestion rate, exposure factor, surface area, and then the total soil adhered to skin, and then the limb. So what surface area did you check off for that? Slide 64, I'm going to talk about this a bit here. What we have here on the bottom is sort of like a spark line. So what we have is we've taken all the data points in your data set and divided it into 100 places, just arbitrarily, equally distant. So if you have 100 points, each point would be fitting in there, depending on from the max to the min, and we separate those two and make it into 100 different bins to put the data into. So what we do on this this graph is we then plot where the minimum value is, which is always the leftmost point, and the maximum is always the rightmost. What we also do is we plot the first quartile, the median, or the second quartile, and the third quartile. What this is helpful for is it gives you an idea of the distribution of the data. It's sort of like looking on a bell curve but top down. So we only really have the one axis. You don't have a y-axis, just the x-axis. But this sort of gives you an idea where all the points are clustered. And it does also list the values as well as where they plot on the line. And then it plots on the bottom of the line where the comparison value is. So you can see the comparison value is very, very low. So that would indicate that nearly all the points are above that. So that's another way of looking at the data quickly. You can either do it visually, you can look at above that where the greater than CV number is. So there's different ways of looking at that. So now, again, slide 65. Again, so again, the dots, there are 100 dots from the minimum to the max, and each dot represents the range divided by 100. And this depiction of data is useful to provide the general visual picture of how the data are distributed. Again, look at it as a top-down view of a bell curve in some ways with the quartiles superimposed on that. So you can sort of see how they're clustered near the low end. Again, that's all it does. You know, it sort of helps another way to look at the data. 66 slide. So this one we can see we're looking at just sort of two reports, the 95 UCL and the arithmetic mean, and of the log transform data. And it just shows you that WLS Shapiro-Wilk, W statistic for normality, the p-value, and sort of gives you some more explanatory notes on that. And again, you can see the two headings. It says actual data above a comparison value. So this is looking at the actual data, how to interpret the printouts. Now, going to slide 67. So the next part of the tool is after you know, have all the site information and then you want to query, you want to look for a site or look for sites that have certain parameters. So you use the query function, which is, again, the top button and then the second submenu is query. And then we'd go to slide 68. So this is the same form visually as the inventory form, but what this does is all data from existing site information entered in the system are used to populate these fields on the inventory form. The user can quickly select which records to view by using these fields. So instead of being boxes you can type into, now they're all populated with drop-down lists that contain actual data in your site. So this approach is very easy and effective to quickly query sites. You can pick off, you know, you want to see what site is in this town and has whatever parameter you want to look at. It's all a drop-down box or a checkbox. So you can find out quickly which one met that criteria. Or how many. So slide 69 indicates after you've typed in your criteria, how many sites really met those criteria. So it gives you a listing, you know, so in this case it says there's one record or there could be either 50 or 800. And then we're going now to slide 70. So on slide 70, this form now is the filtered version of the form we saw earlier. So this form now is only displaying records that met this criteria from the query. So you can see it says filtered on the bottom. And here is where it's a good place if you wanted to export your data, but not everything, just some of the sites. You could use the query first and use this feature. Again, as before, you could edit the site, you could export it, you could delete it. So it's a quick way. You can look at the site visit or the site data. And the site data report is a summary of all the fields that are on the tool, sort of on two sheets that you can, ideally it was designed to hand to like a mayor of a town and say, you know, this is the site, this is what it was used for, and, you know, we have some future use options, and here's some of the reasons why, you know, if it's going to be a daycare center and it was a light bulb manufacturing facility, you know, maybe this is why we don't want to do that. I think more carefully about that. Now, we're on slide 71. So this is importing inventory data. So we work with people throughout the country, and many of them had their own system earlier, and some people had it in Excel or other versions of systems. So this feature lets you import existing data into the tool. Now, if you have fields that the tool doesn't have, they will be lost, or you could remap them to fields that the tool does have, and I'll show you that in a moment. But it is useful, again, to capture data into one tool if you've had existing systems developed. So now we're reaching slide 72. And so the import in exporting site data. So the user has the ability to import existing site data directly into the database. The data import module requires the user to identify the variables in the source field, source file, and assign them to the most appropriate field in the tool. And as well, the tool can also export data to a text file that can include each field exclusive of the attached files. So what you do is, if you have, for instance, some of the states we've worked with, they had the file that was an Excel file. The requirement is that the Excel file must have the top row must be the heading row, so that it should say like site name, you know, town, and other fields such as that. And then those fields that are in your Excel file that you're trying to import, they get taken and then populated into the top drop-down menu. And we'll go to slide 70. So then they get populated into that menu, and then the bottom menu are the fields that are in the database. Let me just go to slide 73 rather. Where again, this is where you'd find your existing data if you had a system that was saved in Excel. So this one just brownfield listing database, and then you'd save it. And then the next thing that happens is slide 74 comes up, and we have, so that's, those are the top one again, is the fields that are in the Excel file. So these are the ones of the headings. Bottom one is the fields in the database. So the importation of data from a spreadsheet required the heading fields to be populated. These fields are used to populate the top drop-down list, and the fields in the top are then mapped to the existing fields in the database. So what we're doing here basically is we try to match up things. So site name, you know, try to find the name that matches something similar to that in this tool. So site name, you'd find the two names, you'd highlight them, and then we're going to slide 75. And so in this case, so you'd select the field from the top list, which contains the fields in the data file, select the matching field from the second list, which is the list in the tool, click on the large black down arrow, right there with the red arrow, and then when finished, click on save and close. So each record must contain a unique field. So that's another thing, and that unique field must be mapped to the scenario name in the tool. And I just, on the right, it's just showing you it's generating some SQL code, but you can just sort of generally see what it's doing. You know, it's renaming things. So that way, once it's imported. Hello? Any questions? No? Okay. So then it gets imported into the tool, and you can now then query it and do other things with it. So that part has been very useful, again, for people that want to have one site, you know, one site that keeps all of the records. Instead of having multiple databases, they can just put it in here. I think databases are sometimes more useful than Excel for this kind of data management. And so that's why this module was added. And so now we're looking at slide 76 now. So we're looking at, so updates. So the site tool will be updated on a regular basis when there's new comparison values or other updates, such as features maybe, including the shower and bathing model. And the deciding factor for updates is either updated comparison values or user suggestions. Again, if you have any suggestions, you know, feel free to let me know. The updated data file will then include an option to import data from a previous version. So we send out the new version. The new version is empty. There's nothing in it as far as sites. And if you want, you can import sites from a previous version into this tool directly. So as far as users, you know, we have quite a range. We have academia, city, county, community groups, environmental contractors, federal government, even international. We have about 5 countries using it, and we have tribal governments as well and states. So it's used quite widely. We distribute the updates on CD. They're not available on the web download for various technical and security reasons. We're not able to do that, but CD method seems to work. Suggestions are always welcome. We're evaluating a tablet platform. It's proving to be a bit more challenging than we first thought, but that would be a nice option at some point to get that ready. So at this really is the end of the first tool that I've spoken on, which is the site tool, the LandReview site tool. Again, questions are always welcome, and I'm going to now go to the next tool. You know, since just sort of the summary. So the HSGR, slide 77 now. I mean, yeah, really. It's not the end of it. It's just that's just the first chunk. So the site tool was developed to meet the needs of local health departments requesting a tool that included rapid site inventory capabilities, including site history, proposed use, contaminants, and future use. The tool enhances what is available. It's free, cost-effective, and helps protect public health. And since ATSGR site tool is designed to be used on platforms independent of the Internet, users may use the tool virtually anywhere. Moreover, since the data is stored locally, they have full access to their own data. No one can get access to it, and it's not dependent on websites being up or down. And the information may be entered in the field using laptops and shared with other computers directly by importing the data. So that's an important feature. So you can be in the field, you know, typing in this on your version of the database. You go back to work, and you can import from one version to another. So you just can import if you had site data and import it to the version that's on your server. So that's really the wrap-up for tool one. Slide 78, a little different look. There's the other tool. So this one is a dose calculator. And this sort of started a lot of this. It's a computer program, again, written in Microsoft Access that allows the users to compute the amount of a toxic substance an individual may be exposed to. What are some of the features of this calculator? You can select from four different scenarios: air, soil, water, or fish. Allows the user to customize the exposure parameters, such as the age of people exposed, quantity, soil, water, fish ingestion, number of days exposed, what surface area of the skin. It incorporates statistical computational algorithms to calculate exposed doses for skin contact scenarios, calculates cancer risk estimations for chemicals that contain cancer slope factors, also displays the ATSGR and EPA health comparison values, and assists reviewers of brownfields land use site data. Okay, so, and then we're just, you know, slide 79. Yep.
We actually had a question come in late here regarding the first tool.
Yep.
And there's a couple of subparts to it, so let me go with the first part. Is there a user guide specifying the equations behind the dose calculations and list source of the standard input parameters?
The user's guide is more or less this tool. So the equations, we have the equations listed on the tool itself as far as the source of the data. So the data are from ATSGR comparison values and EPA data, and we do have some listings of where they're from. I think we need – that's a good suggestion. Probably good to have sort of a compendium that lists as an appendix maybe where everything was sourced. That's a good suggestion.
There's a second question has to do with the distribution of the data. And if the data are neither normal or log normal, can one import a UCL-based or non-parametric?
No.
No.
Currently, this tool right now, you can import data into the tool, whatever format it comes from, but it won't be able to calculate additional statistical parameters. The statistical algorithms come from the Royal Statistical Society. It's open source. It was in Fortran that was migrated to SQL and Visual Basic. But we don't have the ability to add a new, you know, like statistical analysis technique. But you can import data that contains any distribution, and that's perfectly fine. The dose will be calculated, you know, however you wish. The dose calculations based on your data, if they're a certain distribution, you'll have to select one of the options that are built into the tool to view that.
And then a question that talks about the importing feature. If the field names in the Excel file, if they're made to match the database, do you still have to map each one, or will it automatically recognize them?
No, right now you have to do that.
You have to map, yeah.
And then So for people that have a lot of sites, I've actually, you know, I've worked sort of with them, and I've done a lot of that behind the scenes to help them get that So that, you know, if someone has that kind of scenario, that's something we could do. It is a lot of work, but I want to make it easier for people on the other end. But there's no automatic mapping feature now.
Okay. I actually had another question come in, and they want to know how the program calculates the 95 UCL concentration, and does it use pro-UCL? And I think what they're getting at is, does it use the same, does it use the same calculation as
yes.
pro-UCL?
Okay. Yeah, it's the same calculations. Yeah, the same equations that go into it. Yes.
And then, of course, the subpart to that, or a second question, is one we typically get, and it's how does the program treat non-detect results when calculating the average concentration?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to know how non-detects are treated.
Half detection limit.
Okay.
Right. I mean, again, one of the initial features of the tool was that it was a screening tool at first.
Mm-hmm.
And it is getting much more sophisticated. So these suggestions are good. I agree. I mean, maybe there should be an option to look at different ways, you know, is it square root of, you know, different techniques looking at NDs. But currently it's sort of the basic approach for that, yes.
Okay.
Okay.
That's all. I think we're ready to move on.
Yep. Okay, good. Right, so then, you know, both tools do have a disclaimer. You know, basically the idea is that the tools don't provide any recommendations or conclusions. They just give you information. And it's always important to maybe contact a health official to help interpret the data. That's just a disclaimer statement right there. But it's good because, I mean, we have a lot of people using these tools, and the disclaimer sort of helps them realize that, you know, this is a really sophisticated tool in some ways, and it may be helpful to have, you know, a toxicologist or an engineer help them understand what those data mean. So just looking at a printout and say, you know, 20 of them above a comparison may not be as meaningful as looking down and looking at the exposure assumptions in careful detail to be sure that everything is done properly. So that's why the disclaimers are. It's important. Again, it's a screening tool, and it's good to verify the assumptions with someone who's expert in this. So now we're on slide 80. So the tool is used to quickly calculate an exposure dose from a variety of possible routes. So this tool does one chemical at a time. It's like a handheld calculator. So if you have one chemical and you have one concentration of it, you can do it with this tool. It doesn't handle anything more than that. So it's quick back-of-the-envelope approach. You cannot import data into this to calculate anything like that. I mean, the techniques are used into the other tool, but this is a quick approach right away. You can do it. So you can look at inhalation, excluding dust. We don't have a way to look at dust. It's just, you know, inhalation of gases, soil ingestion, dermal contact, water ingestion, and water dermal contact, as well as fish consumption. And you can also save the dose for later use if you like. So now, this part of the tour guide is going to be a little bit less intense as far as how many screens you're going to see, but a very dense screen anyway. So this slide depicts the air exposure module, and the system is fairly easy to use. Again, most information is entered by selecting from predefined drop-down menu. The first step in this is to calculate a dose is to select the chemical. And again, we have the three ways again, name, cast number, or synonym. And the next item that needs to be entered is the contaminant concentration and the units. The tool will convert most common units. Different people present air data differently. I've seen air listed as milligrams per liter. Most common unusual units are in this tool, and it will convert it to standard units. The exposure dose is then calculated by clicking on the button labeled Calculate Exposure Dose. And if the contaminant is a carcinogen, then the user will be able to calculate the excess lifetime cancer risk, is provided they enter the number of years that the exposure is occurring. And there are areas on this module to record notes as well as the source of data for archiving later. So you can put notes to yourself. You can put the value or source. An adult is easily saved in the database by entering a name, which allows numbers, words, and even phrases. So you can, you know, put in, you know, benzene, you know, fish, parcel 6A or something. So that's fairly easy. You can see it also includes some useful equations there. The common ones for converting from micrograms per cubic meter to parts per billion and back and forth. Just as a memory jog, you know, how to do that again. And so then we're looking at slide 82. So now we're looking at soil. So again, this is sort of like the screen except for the other two, but all in one place. So again, many fields are similar. Each module contains a tab that also lists the health comparison value, cancer classification, and alternative comparison values. And I just wanted to just quickly retract to be sure that people understand that a comparison value is used typically by ATSCR, and many of them are ATSCR-derived values. We have derived cancer, non-cancer, health-based comparison values for contaminants. These guidelines are defined as an estimate of the daily oral exposure of humans, including sensitive subpopulations, which are likely to be without appreciable risk of deleterious health effects. Such guidelines are not thresholds for toxicity, but are useful for screening to determine if more detailed evaluations are necessary. The comparison values that ATSGR has developed typically include the Environmental Media Evaluation Guide, the Cancer Risk Evaluation Guide, which is based on one excess cancer among a million people similarly exposed, and also we use the Reference Dose Media Evaluation Guide, and others. And we also do include the EPA's RFD, oral RFD, the RFC, inhalation unit risk, and oral slope factor. The dose calculated in each module are then compared to the human health comparison values. It has to be done visually. The tool doesn't tell you that this is high or low. You look at the results on this screen, then you click on the tab that says comparison value, and you can see is it higher or lower. And then again, in general, if the dose is lower than the comparison value, then the exposure scenario is unlikely to result in adverse health effects. So if the dose is higher, adverse effects are possible. And generally, the exposure assumptions need to be looked at more closely. So again, it's not a bright line. It's just, you know, you need to assess what's going on with your scenario. And the tool, again, is a screening system providing results that may need to be discussed with a risk assessor or health assessor. And additionally, it can also be discussed with an ATSGR regional rep or others similarly trained. We also have a cancer classification tab, which includes the cancer classification of the compound from EPA, also the International Agency for Research on Cancer, and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services National Toxicology Program about the carcinogenicity of the chemical. The modules contain useful conversion equations, especially important when calculating the conversion factor for risk assessments. So you can see in this module, the soil ingestion, that it indicates how we got from the conversion factor needed was 1 times 10 to the negative 9. That's because the input units came in as parts per billion, and we need to come out as parts per million, or milligrams per kilogram per day. So that's the conversion to get back down to that. So the conversion factor changes dynamically depending on what input units you started out with. And the output units will always be milligrams per kilogram per day. And now we're going on to slide 83. So once you see the image of 2 feet, that's a dermal one. So we have, this is the soil dermal module, and that focuses on the soil dermal exposure. So the dermal module includes new features that allow the user to select the areas exposed based on user-defined criteria. The areas exposed are linked to the body weight selected previously and change dynamically as you click on areas. As you add or remove them, the surface area will change. The user may also change the viability factor and others if they wish, or use the default value. And throughout these modules, you'll notice that we include the dose calculation equations and parameters are easily and clearly identified. So we do list the equation here. We need to add that to the user's guide for the multiple chemical dose calculating tool. Again, you can see most of the information is text boxes. You can check the box, fill it in with freeform text or drop-down menus. And now slide 84 is for calculating the dose from ingestion of contaminated water, and many features now may be familiar to you. The user has the option to list whether they want standard intake rates of water or customized, as well as their own different units, and also list the conversion factor. So again, you can see it's quite similar. So you can also, again, you look by cast number, synonym, or chemical. And it does list the results on the bottom. It says results for us. So it lists the name and the cast number. So, if you typed in just the cast number, it'll actually tell you what that chemical name is. And then we're going back onto 85. So again, the feet. So now this is the Doyle. This dermal exposure for water contamination. And this form also includes the more refined exposure parameters for length and frequency of exposure, as well as minutes and hours per day and days per year. So there's a little bit more refined exposure of that for the water. And now, so really we're going to slide 86. And so this is the dose calculation that's used for the consumption of contaminated fish, which is depicted here. In keeping with more options are better, we have provided numerous ways to calculate the consumption of fish. You can either look at the amount of fish per day, grams per day, days per year, or amount of fish per meal, and then meals per week, or standard intake rates, such as subsistence fishers, recreational fishers, various parameters that are commonly used. So, again, you can see that this tool is pretty... everything is up front on this tool, and you do it one at a time, and you can quickly get your results that way. So you can also save data into the tool. As new comparison values are updated, we provide a new version of the tool. And the new version of the tool, similar to the site tool, contains all the new data and can then import previous doses calculated from other versions. So you can import the data into this new tool as we get new comparison values. That's the second tool. It's again pretty easy to use. It's more like a handheld calculator than anything. You just one chemical, one value at a time. It's been useful. A lot of people just want to get a quick thumbnail, and that's the way that's dealt with. At this point, we're on slide 86. So we're basically giving you a guided tour of two main tools that we've developed here. The Brownfields Land Reuse Site Tool, which includes the inventory and the multiple chemical dose calculation feature, and then the dose calculator, which, again, is like a handheld dose calculator. At this point, I really have concluded my prepared remarks, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them.
Yeah, we've got a couple that came in, Gary. This is the first one, and this is talking about the dose calculator. Can the user choose or define toxicity values for calculating risks and hazards?
Well, the hazard, in other words, a hazard quotient, we will give you the dose, and you can get a hazard quotient by using a custom or user-defined reference dose. That you can do on your own. But as far as risks, so cancer risk then would be based internally on the oral slope factor or the inhalation unit risk. Those don't change and can't be changed from within the tool.
Okay. And does the dose calculator allow for summation of risks among the different exposure pathways?
No. Nope. It's a very handheld calculator approach. It gives you the results. You can write it down. It doesn't summarize that. Nope.
Okay. For any, Anybody who is on the phone may chime in. You may hit #6 to unmute your phone if you use *6 to mute it.
Well, one thing I just want to say, if you do want a copy of this, feel free to send me an email. We can send you the CD and DVD packet. It also includes a booklet that's called Leading Change for Healthy Communities and Successful Land Reuse. So it's a guidebook on communities that actually have used these approaches, these tools, as well as the community action tool to help clean up sites and incorporating public health in the decision process.
We did have someone who commented on your slide number 86.
The one we're on now, yep.
Yeah, they said that the molecular weight for mercury is incorrect on there. So I don't know if that's because you're using a... an assumption on what type of mercury it is?
No, actually, that really doesn't get used in the fish one.
Okay.
So I'm not sure why, yeah. No, that's a good point. I'm not sure why it gets displayed there. But yeah, no, I'll make note of that. We can see if that's a necessary thing to even have.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, again, I mean, this tool, both of them are, you know, they're in use and they can be, they're sort of like works in progress. You know, people have suggestions they'd like to see. Be glad to incorporate them if we're able to.
Anybody on the phone want to chime in? #6. Unmute your phone. While we're waiting, let me remind folks of on slide 87, we have links to additional resources and also a link to the feedback form. And also on Clue-In, on our live, clueIn.org/live, or you can go to clueIn.org and hit live events on the right side toolbar there, and it'll take you to our calendar. And we have, as you can see, we will have several more NARPM Presents events coming up in October and November. And you can check those out. And we did actually have a comment. It'd be nice to show real examples of how to use the dose calculator.
Real examples? Well, you can sort of imagine, you know, if you have a site and someone has given you some data to quickly look at, or fish tissue data. I mean, it can be used really in any way that you'd want to. If you want to quickly calculate a dose to see if there's any excess risk, you know, anything goes with that. I don't know. We don't really have sort of examples per se. I mean, with the site tool, we've had people that use that in various ways as just inventory, just dose calculating, or both. But this tool is really sort of however you wish to use it.
Hey, Gary, this is Robert Knowles.
Hey, Robert.
Is the July 2008 version the most recent version, or is there one after that?
Yeah. We're actually in the process of getting a later version updated. That's the... we will send you... Yeah. What happened is we had a 2000 print job, and then we had the latest comparison values were updated shortly after that. So we will get the newest version out. So 2008 is still working, but it's got old values in it. That's our concern. You know, it's a little bit of a process to get them updated as quickly as they get updated in the comparison values. But we will try to get the latest one out there shortly.
Okay.
And Gary, how can folks get a disc with the tools on it?
So, you can send me an email. You can also, there were some attachments associated with this presentation Mm-hmm. And there's some fact sheets. I think everybody has access to them. So on the fact sheets, there's also, we have a website. And, you know, you can go to the website, you can send me an email, there's different ways. Again, it's not downloadable. So if you wish, you can send me an email, and I'll be glad to send it out.
Yeah, and we have some of those links linked in our additional resources area for today's presentation.
And they should be accessible now, right?
Yes, they're up. So people can go to the additional resources page and... we've got the links over there.
87 slide, that one, yeah. So you can see we have the actual fact sheets, each of the tools, and that give you more information, and you can also, it lists our website. We do have a specific email address, so you can send me an email. You know, either way, it's fine.
I remember at the beginning you talked a little bit about Microsoft Access and what versions it works with.
Yeah.
And this is just to clarify that there's a question that came in asking about Microsoft Access 2007 versus 2003.
Yeah.
Will 2007 work?
Right. So that's a good point, and we've struggled with that. So this tool is developed in Access, but it's a version that's called Compiled Access. It was a decision that we made that we felt it's more likely that everybody's going to have 2003 or newer, and unlikely to have anything older than 2003. So when it's compiled, if you have 2003 or newer, the system will work on your computer. If you have anything older than 2003, it won't. But we decided not to compile it in 2007 because then the 2003 people wouldn't get access to it. You know, it's kind of an odd decision process that Microsoft made. That if you do compile something in 07, no one else earlier versions could read it. And we said, that's not okay. We have too many people that still use 03. So it will work with everything above, including 2003 and above.
Okay. Are there any other questions on the phone lines? I know that we've gotten just slightly past 2:30. So if there, I don't have any other questions that have come in through text. And if you do have any questions, you can email Gary. And his contact information is on the first slide of today's presentation. And we appreciate all the participants for joining us today, and we'd like to thank Gary for presenting the information. And once again, we really appreciate it if you could fill out the feedback form, and you can easily do that by going to slide 87 and clicking the link that says feedback form. And once again, the additional resources link has the fact sheets and some of the links to the tool of websites that Gary mentioned today.
And if I may add one thing, I might just add. I'm sorry. On slide 77 is where my email address is. I guess for some reason I forgot to put it on slide one.
No, we got it. We added it on slide one.
Okay, I'm sorry. I didn't notice. Okay.
Yeah, we have an introductory slide or a title slide that we put in there.
All right. The one that the clue-in slide. Yes, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Good.
All righty. So, if there's nothing else, I appreciate everybody, and thanks for attending today's NARPM Presents webinar on CLUIN. Thanks.